So let's get to the meat of the story. What is the real story? How did the telescope really come to be? And was it even one person who thought it up? Here to answer some of those questions is my guest. He's Albert Van Helden. He's a science historian, professor emeritus of Rice University. He's also professor emeritus of Utrecht University in the Netherlands, where he's joining us over the phone. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? How are you this
evening?
Fine.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, everybody we ask always says it's going to be Galileo, but they're always wrong, aren't they?
Well, yes, they are.
How did all this get started?
Well, we can understand why. I mean, it's Galileo who really made it famous, but he didn't invent it. In fact, it's not at all clear if we can find the actual identity of an inventor, although the person who claimed a patent or a privilege for it in 1608, we know that person. That's Hans Lipperhey. No S, by the way. Hans Lipperhey.
Mm. And what was he doing at the time?
Oh, he was a spectacle maker in the city of Middelburg, which is in the extreme southwest of the Netherlands. He was sent with a letter of recommendation by the city fathers to The Hague, where the national government sat, the States General. And he presented the instrument to Prince Maurice, who was the military commander of the Dutch Armed Forces, and Prince Maurice referred him to the States General, and he asked for a patent, and they examined the instrument. They asked him to make some more of those instruments, to use better sorts of glass, to make them binocular, and then they paid him quite a bit of money, 900 guilders, and denied his patent. The reason for that is that the instrument was so easy to copy.
How good a telescope did he make in those days?
Well, he made the one that he presented to Prince Maurice, and then he made three more for the States General, and that's all we know.
So this was not envisioned originally as a tool for science, but for defense, military uses.
Yeah, but of course it wasn't all that useful for military purposes until rather later, I think.
Yeah.
But no, it was not. Science was not part of it, although it's pretty obvious to direct it to the heavens. But these are 3-4 powered spyglasses that don't really show very much in the heavens.
Mm-hmm. Could you use them, let's say, out looking over the ocean? When did the telescope become useful for seeing ships out there?
Well, this particular instrument at higher powers has a very small field of view, and on the deck of a pitching deck of a ship, it's very difficult to see anything through it. Later on in the 17th century, you get sort of 10 powered spyglasses with a large field of view. And, you know, then they become common on ships on the ocean.
What was the technical hurdle that you had to overcome to make a better telescope?
The way the telescope came about is that spectacle lenses, which had been around since 1300, became better and better. Excuse me. In the 16th century, lens makers began grinding them on both sides and polishing them on both sides, of course. And then the quality of those lenses became almost good enough for a telescope. But the shape of the convex lens was not accurate enough. And so it was only right in the center that a little bit was truly spherical. And that little area sort of grew. And by 1608, with the best glass and top-of-the-line lens makers, you could actually have a convex lens of, say, 3 centimeters in diameter, of which you had an area in the center of about 1 centimeter in diameter through which the image was perfect. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the light coming through the rest of the lens would screw everything up.
Right.
And so It's when someone, and that may very well have been Lippershey, put an aperture ring, in other words, a cardboard ring with a little hole in the center of about 1 centimeter diameter, and then all of a sudden you got an enlarged image that was clear and in focus. And that Lippershey realized that, and he said, hey, I've got something here. And he went to the government.
Mm-hmm. And they paid him to make more telescopes.
Yeah, they paid him enough money to buy a house, 900 guilders.
Wow. So how did Galileo get into this picture?
Well, the news spread from The Hague through diplomatic channels because The Hague happened to be the seat of an international peace conference. And so everybody was sending the news home in a diplomatic pouch. There was also a newsletter published very quickly after Lippershey's patent application, and that reached Venice probably in November 1608, where Galileo's friend, Paolo Sarpi, read it and alerted Galileo. But nothing much happened for a while because Sarpi, and of course Galileo as well, had been hearing so many rumors about powerful magic mirrors and things like that, that they thought that the news of a magic mirror from the court in Paris was the same news about a magic device coming from the court in The Hague. Mm-hmm. So it took a while for them to get confirmation, and it's not really until the spring, well into the spring of 1609, that Galileo got confirmation. He made his own by just simply going to a spectacle maker's shop and playing with lenses. And then he realized that if he could improve that device, then it had a lot of promise for career opportunities, and yeah, who knows what else. Mm-hmm. And so he set out to make a more powerful instrument, and by August he was presenting one to the Venetian Senate, and so all the old gentlemen went up to the top of the Campanile of San Marco and looked out and were surprised that they could see a sail 2 hours before it was visible with the naked eye. So that has a strategic importance.
So the military would like, so he impressed the government folks, and they realized the military possibilities of this. And also, yep. I guess if you're a business person and you can see the cargo ships coming in earlier, you can get a jump up on the competition.
Absolutely. Buy the futures or sell the futures. Absolutely.
Things don't change, do they?
No. Not in trading cities like Venice and,
So but he decided that he could use it as an instrument to look at the heavens.
Right. And I imagine that that he just, with every instrument, he looked at the moon or, turned it to the heaven. The fact is you still couldn't see very much in the heavens because these instruments weren't that good when turned to bodies that, for their size, like planets and stars, are extremely bright.
Mm-hmm.
So, for a body like the moon, they were better, but the magnification was not enough. And so Galileo kept improving the telescope, and by November he had a telescope that magnified about 20 times and of good quality, gave a high-quality image. And then he planned to do a research project observing the moon and drawing it and things like that. And that's what he did in the first half of December 1609.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made a further improvement so that he could actually see things about the planets and the stars.
So he was grinding his own lenses, putting the telescope together himself. He wasn't sending it out to a shop anywhere.
No, he was very eclectic. What he needed was large blanks. The larger the blank, the larger the central surface you can grind and polish perfectly spherical.
And there's actually a shopping list of items that Galileo wanted to buy, right?
Yes.
What was on that list?
Well, an organ pipe that he wanted to use as a tube for a telescope. There was Greek resin, in other words, pine resin, that you use to glue a glass blank to a wooden tool so you can grind with it.
Mm-hmm.
There was discussion in that list, several possibilities of the sort of forms that you would have to have. And should they be of stone or of steel, he needed to ask that. He needs to buy a cannonball on which to grind concave lenses. And then he needed white sand, which is a very fine sand from a certain region in Italy, and Tripoli powder, which is still used today.
Let me just interrupt and remind everybody that this is Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow talking with Albert Van Helden. Sorry, Dr. Van Helden. Go ahead. So did he have any extras on there that you usually find on a shopping list?
Well, on that shopping list was also a dress for his common-law wife. But we can infer from this that, yes, clearly, if there was any doubt, Galileo and perhaps his technician, because he employed a technician, were grinding and polishing lenses.
Did he make them only for himself?
Yes. He was shrewd enough, and especially when he started directing it at the moon and drawing it, he realized that this is an important argument. And he was already in December beginning to write up mm-hmm. his results.
Who came up with the name telescope?
A Greek gentleman who used it at a banquet that was held for Galileo in Rome in the spring of 1611 when he went for his triumphant victory to Rome.
They named it at, they held a banquet and someone suggested the name.
That's right. Well, somebody read a little oration and a poem and said, we ought to call this telescopium.
Huh.
Hence the word telescope.
If I wanted, and this year of astronomy, wanted to go out and build a replica, is it possible to do that? Can you get the parts and get them all together? Is there a place to find those things?
Yes. And I think that the best place to go is the website of the Institute and Museum for the Story of Science, for the History of Science. Mm-hmm. It's imss.fi for Firenze, .it for Italy.
imss.fi.it.
Yes.
And you can learn how to build one yourself and get the...
And you get references there.
I'm sure you enjoy retelling the story over and over again because it's a great story.
Oh, yeah. It's a great job. Do you know they pay you for this?
No, they pay you for this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, not anymore. I'm retired. But, yes, it's a great profession.
It's a great...
It takes you all over the place.
It keeps you looking up, doesn't it?
Yes. So... So it's Galileo who made the instrument famous,
yeah.
And so his name gets attached to the instrument. Yeah. He discovers the satellites of Jupiter in the first half of January 1610, and that's truly shocking. These are entirely new planetary bodies, since time immemorial.
Yeah, and that gets and we know the story about how that gets him into a lot of trouble with the Vatican and so on, and so
later.
Forth. That's later. Well, I had to speed it up because we've run out of time. I had to get to the end first, Dr. Van Helden. Thank you very much for taking
time. You had to telescope it, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Okay, my pleasure.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend and happy anniversary to astronomy and the telescope. You're welcome. Albert Van Helden is a science historian and professor emeritus of Rice University, and he's also professor emeritus of Utrecht University, Netherlands. That's about all the time we have. Our program is produced by Christopher Intagliata, senior producer Ned Heiss. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman, our producer for digital media. Laura Pelcher, a Sci Arts producer. An intern is Eric Ortlip. Neil Rausch is our technical director and at the controls here in New York. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com for all the information you need to know. I'm Ira Flatow in New York. Scott-o.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo
Figaro.
Magnifico! I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.